Bailing out Wall Street is the only way to save Main Street, so says the president.
And in the last 24 hours, many founders, investors that I've talked to have been desperately trying to get their money out.
We are at the beginning of a very classic late cycle, late big cycle debt crisis.
Can you characterize everything that the Fed has done this past week as essentially flooding the system with money?
Yes.
The Bitcoin system is so perfect that I think it's going to be the future.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. How are you?
Doing well also.
Awesome. Well, today has been like, this week has been a huge week. I don't even know where to start. I'm actually in a chat group and people are starting to shoot questions at me because they're like, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? There's five different things going on. There's Bitcoin, big Bitcoin news. There's big macroeconomic news. And there's big news in the United States with respect to taxes and the economy. And it just feels like they could be related. I think they are related. I think that that's like kind of the galaxy brain approach, is to figure out how all of these things are actually related to each other. But yeah, the US government in the form of both the SEC and the FBI have taken steps to attack privacy, financial privacy, and transactional privacy. And we can talk about that. There's a few big news items there. And the result of all of it is that the landscape of Bitcoin in the United States has just changed. It's not a huge change, but there are companies that are making decisions now about how they operate and where they operate as a result of just the last few days of actions by the federal government. And so maybe we can start there, because that's top of mind for me, since this news just came out, which you shared with me, that Phoenix wallet is no longer going to be operating in the United States. So maybe back that up to the trigger for that, which was the arrest of Samurai wallet executives a few days ago, followed by and I don't remember what agency this was, but it was the SEC, I believe, was taking a regulatory action against MetaMask for being an unregistered broker dealer.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's huge.
And then the third thing was
outside of our world, but
yeah, well, but it's, well, yeah, but we should talk about it, because I think it's been talked about in Bitcoin circles, and the question is part of the same story, or is it really a part of attacking DeFi, or is it choke point, you know? But the other thing that was significant was this FBI memo that was released to Americans, right? It was a PR campaign that the FBI just underwent to communicate to Americans. And then the fourth thing was Phoenix Wallet exiting the US market. But so let's back it up. So was Samurai Wallet being shut down by the FBI this week, was that the first step, or were there almost like rumblings before that, or was that like big moment?
I think that was the first step. And I think I do want to back it up and say that Samurai was a little different. It wasn't just like open source code that was released into the world. Like they made money off of this service, and or at least I'm fairly confident that they did. And so
But it was open source, but then they also used their own open source software to run their own coordinator. So it's like they released this code that anybody could run, but then they ran kind of the best version of it, or the biggest version of it.
Yeah. So it's a little bit murkier than just a like Bitcoin, right? And so I also think that it's important. So they were charged with facilitating like $100 million in illicit transactions, and over $2 billion in what is called an unlawful transactions, which are like not illicit but like not allowed or something like that. Mm-hmm. And some people did some like deep dives into the transactions that happened on Samurai, and like the government itself is only alleging that 3 or 4% of all of the transactions across it were illicit. So like when you compare that to the fiat system, it's not that much worse or different in terms of like illicit activity that occurs across bank monetary networks relative right. to ratio of like illicit to non-illicit. Mm-hmm. So that was the first shoe to drop. And then MetaMask was served a Wells notice, which is basically like an alert from the SEC saying, you know, we're going to come get you, but not yet. So here's a notice. And that prompted Consensus, which is an organization related to the Ethereum Foundation. I'm not, all this ETH stuff is just, you know, it's a complicated mess. However, Consensus is now suing the SEC. MetaMask is a browser wallet that's basically like the go-to wallet for all things like crypto, right? Not that many people use it for Bitcoin, but if you've ever like, you know, bought like Polygon, ETH, whatever, like
NFTs, right?
Yeah, if you've ever tried to buy an NFT, I remember a few years ago I bought an NFT to like prank a former boss by like sending it to him. It didn't work out because like he had to then like get the software to like open it, right? So I couldn't just like send him an NFT, but I bought him an NFT cover of like his least favorite band, the Moody Blues, and I was like gonna send it to him as a birthday present, but it was like too complicated to be like a good joke. So I think I still own like an NFT, but anyway,
that's funny.
MetaMask is like what you use to do all that. So like cutting off MetaMask means cutting off like the primary wallet that most people use for like crypto that's not Bitcoin. And
right.
So it's a huge deal.
Well, and it's self-custody, right? But so yeah. The question, so something that people are now wondering is this an attack on self-custody? I mean, I think that there is always this looming concern that in the United States, because we are headed towards a major devaluation of our currency, there's no way around it. When the time comes, when the powers that be decide that they need to close the exits from our failing currency and into something hard money like Bitcoin, they want to be able to control those exits. And the way that they would do that without triggering legal actions that could end badly for them, right? Because if people start asserting the constitutional right to private property and say that Bitcoin is their property or other cryptocurrencies or NFTs are their property, and those sorts of cases work their way through the system, then, you know, the federal government the regulators could be on shaky ground to prevent the closure of those exits, whereas what they're doing instead, which is very smart, and I would do the same thing if I was them, they're allowing people to own it so that they kind of sidestep the private property concerns, but then they are just ensuring that if you are going to own it, you're going to own it in a custodial fashion, you're not going to own it yourself, and you're going to own it through with KYC, if at all possible. Know your customer. What that means is, if you want to buy any kind of digital asset, you have to give the company who's offering you that asset, or even person, right? Because even like in Europe, it will even be that individuals will have to be responsible to not transact with others without knowing who they are. And so that's what they want to do here. And what that would allow them to do is easily track people and their transactions. And then that would give them the leverage that they need to close off the exits. So the question is, does this Wells notice that the SEC just sent to MetaMask? But what's the name of the actual company? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Consensus?
Consensus is like suing the SEC as a result of this stuff, but I don't know whether Consensus makes MetaMask. You can think of like the Ethereum Foundation, Consensus, and MetaMask is all related, but I don't know the official relationships in order to provide definitive commentary with respect to them.
Okay. Well, anyway, so the question is, whether the Wells notice has to do with the fact that MetaMask provides for self-custody. Now, I don't actually think that it does.
Yeah.
Because another thing that MetaMask does is offer you it offers, it's an exchange. Mm-hmm. So it offers you the ability to acquire cryptocurrency. Now, is there KYC in that experience? I don't remember. I've also used MetaMask many years ago and I don't remember.
Yeah. But the nature of what's being sold, right?
Right, right.
It's not right. Bitcoin. It's like all these other things, which we don't know whether, you know, like could yep. be like a securities thing. Yeah. So I think that one like kind of problem with the thesis that this is like an attempt to front run capital controls by the US government mm-hmm. is that you like, I mean, if there are no wallets, like how they would do that is by forcing limits on how much you can buy from exchanges and on-ramps,
mm-hmm.
right? That's how you would do capital controls. They could do that today.
Right.
They don't need to ban self-custody to do that. Self-custody, like what self-custody gives you is the ability to like, you know, transact freely or also take your Bitcoin and like leave the country with it or something. Otherwise you'd have to like, you know, send it from like, let's say Coinbits to Binance like UAE and then like withdraw it in like Binance UAE or something like that. Right. So I think that like, honestly, I think people are getting a little bit like tripped up on the words here. Like, I think that the government obviously doesn't like everything that's like non-KYC, but like in that FBI letter that we were talking about earlier, where the government went out and said, you know, you should consider like not using these services. I think they were talking about Samurai, like services like Samurai rather than services like Moon Wallet or like Blue Wallet or Blockstream Green or like hardware devices, right? I don't think that they really see those in the same light as like Samurai. Does that make sense?
It does, but then, well, it does, except that the question is the conspiracy to run an unlicensed money transmitter business, that was what one of the charges that was levied against the Samurai. And if you look at the language, and I don't have it in front of me, maybe I can find it while we talk, but the language for how they define a money services business is they say money service business is, and they list out, you know, 10 specific definitions and actions and so on. And then the second bullet is, or anyone else participating in the transmission of money, right? So it's so flexible that mm-hmm. Mining pools could be attacked for being money transmitters or money services businesses. Lightning node operators could be, I don't think they should be. I'm not advocating for that. But the way that these terms are vaguely constructed, mm-hmm. That's the danger. And so even though I think perhaps some of this stuff is overblown with the response to MetaMask perhaps being an attack on self-custody. Yeah. If it's starting a conversation, which it is online, I've been watching it on Twitter, where there are Bitcoiners and crypto people saying, self-custody is the hill to die on. We need to get our ducks in a row and send a very clear message that mm-hmm. self-custody is a natural right protected by the United States Constitution.
I actually think that it's just like, I think a stronger argument, well, like, because people talk about rights a lot. Mm-hmm. I think a stronger argument is that it is best practices. Like, mm-hmm. self-custody is an industry best practice in order to me as a consumer protect myself from a bad exchange.
That's a good point, too.
Right? Yeah. Like, people are like, oh, you're so shady. And I'm like, no, actually, I'm just following industry best practices.
Yeah.
And like just hammering that home. Like, it's like, this is actually what I'm doing as a smart person, not a shady person. And like, yeah, so
that's a great way of that's a great way of putting it. Maybe that's the first argument. Right. But then if they say, well, best practice or not, it's not allowed.
Yeah. You're like,
then you're like, no, it's a natural right.
Yeah.
But wait, so let's touch more on that FBI memo. So FBI sends out a memo, and what did it basically, what was the gist of it?
It was basically warning Americans to take, or to like, be careful about their funds on wallets that are like, I think they used the language unhosted wallets. I'm going to.
Wasn't it KYC?
It said, for example. So that's the thing. So it says FBI. I'm just going to read it real quick. FBI warns Americans against using cryptocurrency money transmitting services that are not registered as money services businesses, according to U.S. federal law, and do not adhere to AML requirements. A few simple steps can prevent unintentional use of non-compliant services. For example, avoid cryptocurrency money transmitting services that do not collect know your customer information. So if you read this, like, and you think that, let's just use like Moon Wallet as an example. I don't think that Moon Wallet is a money transmitting service. Therefore, I am avoiding cryptocurrency money transmitting services that don't collect KYC by, like, therefore my using Moon Wallet does not have anything to do with this. If Coinbits, our business, did not collect KYC, then we would be something that you should avoid per this like letter, right? So I think that like that's how you could charitably interpret this, that like that's what they're warning people about. If they like greatly expand what a money transmitting service is to all non-custodial wallets, then I think that things are, then I think the game changes basically. But like, for example, Zeus said that they're not, like, they're staying in the US, right? They announced that on Twitter. I think that Phoenix proactively, or using like a precautionary principle, decided to exit the US because I don't think they want like the trouble. However, like I basically think that Bitcoiners are right to get very concerned about this stuff, but like at the same time, I know this will play out over many years, and I don't know. It's what's interesting is like, is if my private keys are like hardware devices, then there's nothing really that they can't really like do anything, right? Unless they like they could stop, they could shut down the company, but the devices would still work.
Well, for, I mean, if you have a seed phrase, then you have access to your Bitcoin. So, anytime you have access to the Bitcoin network. But the problem is, sure, but so of course, but you know, tyranny knows no bounds. So if they say that it's illegal to possess a seed phrase, whether or not you think that that's constitutional, whether or not you think that, you know, you're like in the moment, even if it eventually is defeated, just like Executive Order 6102 was unconstitutional, but they did it, just like COVID lockdowns were unconstitutional, but they did it. And then we have to sort through it later. I think even in Canada, it was the Supreme Court or some other high level government body did, you know, retroactively found that Trudeau went too far when he froze the bank accounts of the Canadian truckers. Fine, good. Like that doesn't help though for like the Canadian trucker movement in that moment to protect their rights.
Yeah.
So the fact, you know, tyranny knows no bounds. Like, could they make having a seed phrase illegal? People talk about all the time on Twitter how ridiculous that would be, how ridiculous it would be to have like a sequence of words be illegal, or like, you know, you print out every seed word which can generate a private key, and now is that an illegal document? It's like, well, you can point out the absurdity all day long until you're blue in the face, but It doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. And I think it could
definitely
happen, especially in the death throes of the US dollar.
Yeah, definitely. I guess what I'm saying is that I think people should be very on edge and like think about these things. However, these like most recent announcements are not like how these ones are worded does not mean that like all wallets are going to be banned. Like
no,
tomorrow.
That's true.
It's kind of like a, like there could be an environment where just Samurai goes down because they were the ones that like, you know, broke more like.
I think Samurai is very important because Samurai is a very interesting case. They, we've talked about what, well, we haven't really talked about what they did, but what they did was they coordinated transactions so that people who would put their coins into this coordinator server would then be able to get other coins out that were totally separate from their spending history. One of the things about Bitcoin, for those that don't know, it's very decentralized. It's very hard, if not impossible, to stop. It's very hard, if not impossible, to change. It's not that private, though. That's like the one thing, right? So you can use it privately, but by default, it's very, very not private. It's a public record. And every transaction can be traced backwards in time on the blockchain to previous ones. And so what Samurai provided was they would coordinate these spending transactions so that you could put Bitcoin in, and the Bitcoin that you would get out would be totally divorced from your own spending history with your own Bitcoin. And it's probabilistically impossible to figure out which coins used to belong to whom. So they were adding privacy to Bitcoin. And, you know, I like what you put in the newsletter, the tweet from Dylan Leclerc, privacy is not a crime. It's hard to remember sometimes, right? But we went through this exercise in the 90s with encryption, where the government painted the concept of wanting encrypted communications as inherently suspect. And we're going now and having the same exact conversation about money and transactions.
Yeah.
And what Samurai was doing, like you just said, in the worst case, it was a few percent of the transactions were associated with any kind of illicit activity whatsoever. Most people using that, I mean, most of the time that you buy a new personal node computer or you're looking online, Samurai is like one, and Ronin Dojo, these are like common tools. People don't realize this is not an esoteric thing that most people didn't interact with. Like I didn't use it, but like that's not because I wouldn't use it. I just never got around to setting it up, you know, that kind of thing, right? Yeah. So most of the people doing it were just using it to increase their own privacy. The interesting thing about this case, though, which makes it an interesting exercise in like public relations and reputation management and the consequences for that, is that the Samurai wallet executives were very vocally irreverent.
Inviting criminals to use it.
Okay. The most charitable sort of interpretation of that is, we're so confident that that this provides so much privacy that even a criminal could use it, right? Something like that. Or it could be, it could be like this radical libertarian perspective being like, all transactions should always be legal no matter what, and you should prosecute the crime, not the use of money in the crime.
Yeah, I don't think that's radical. I think that's like, just want to say, I don't think that's radical.
I don't necessarily think so, but that's not the reality we live in today.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they also have free speech, and they also, and the two examples that I saw of speech that was cited by the FBI was, one was when they publicly tweeted after there was an announcement of sanctions against Russian oligarchs. They were like, welcome to Samurai Wallet, Russian oligarchs, come
oh my gosh,
evade sanctions here.
Wow.
So that's the, and the other thing was actually a private DM. So that's interesting. So FBI obtained the private direct message on Twitter, where somebody from that account was saying to somebody, oh yeah, one of the things that we really believe in is the dark is the dark web and darknet markets and like enabling like illegal activity online. Okay. So they didn't do themselves any favors, but
yeah, that's
what's interesting about it is there's like what they say, and then there's actually what was going on. And the question is, can they tie what they said, their quote unquote intent, right? If they even if they had like criminal intent to allow criminals to use this, but then it was used overwhelmingly by people who were just protecting their privacy. Like, I don't know if that would make a difference with people. But I think you were saying too, it's like the impression of impropriety is hard to overcome with a jury who's like a lay jury.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. If it makes it there. So yeah, it's an interesting case. Oh, another, have you ever heard of the DeFi protocol called Peach?
No.
So there was a, let me see. There was a DeFi like hacker who exploited this protocol. Something happened to him this week where he was arrested and it was funny because he said that basically like everything he was doing was within the code, like it was acceptable within the code, so like he wasn't like hacking anything or like stealing anything. Mm-hmm. He was just going by the rules of the protocol. However, he is being charged with like normal crimes. So I think that that also is like, should serve as a reminder to people that like code is law within the system, but that doesn't mean that code is law outside the system. Like
right.
Law is law in right. The US. So right. Like there's, it's, and I think, I don't know, like, I don't know how much, I don't really think that like plays into the samurai stuff, but I think it's like kind of a, should be a wake up call for, or a reminder for people in the like broader crypto industry that like you can like steal a bunch of money because like the DAO had stupid rules, but that doesn't mean that like you're not going to get charged by like the Southern District of New York for stealing like $100 million or something.
Right.
So.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah. People get too cocky. And I think that's exactly what happened with the samurai guys too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay humble and stack sats. That's what they say.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I was trying to think, I was like, the Icarus story is like thousands of years old, right? Like you gotta just can't fly too close to the sun. And you know, what's interesting is like, what would this do if I were an Azteco voucher person in the US? I would wonder, should I be selling these vouchers for cash anymore?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, like, am I like a money transmitter?
Right.
It's a really, I think, I don't know. And it'll be interesting, especially, I think that people have been realizing that like, you know, and I don't think this is like a partisan take, but the current administration is incredibly hostile to the broader like crypto industry.
Mm-hmm.
The opposing candidate currently would likely be much less hostile.
Likely so, yes. Although likely. Not necessarily. Yeah.
Not necessarily. But
as of now, Trump has said that he thinks Bitcoin is great, but he's always believed in one really powerful thing, which is the
exactly.
dollar.
Exactly.
Okay, so what does that? So
when the dollar?
Yeah, when the rubber meets the road, what would he do? I don't know.
Exactly.
If he got scared by people, which he got scared, he got hosed by the COVID crew, mm-hmm. right? If he could easily be hosed, even if he had the best intentions.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
However, what I'm saying is we're entering into this period where like all of you know, Bitcoin and the tools and everything, it's like becoming more normalized. And therefore like regulators are starting to like interact with it and like mm-hmm. finally attempt to come up with some rules. And this administration's and this administration's Department of Justice, agencies, et cetera, have been very, very hostile, very bad.
Right.
That doesn't mean that it always has to be that way.
I agree. Good point. Good point. No, I know. Actually, I was talking to somebody who I won't say what company, but it was a fintech company, a very big one that you've all heard of. And anyway, he was saying, like, you know, if depending on how things go in November, things may change. So it's a widespread sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting that this person got political in a meeting like that. It wasn't overly political. We weren't going to go into like the politics of everything, but just saying, listen, things are going this way right now. In a couple of years, it could be very different. So we'll
see. I think everybody's gotten like depending on the outcome, there's like everybody's lined up, like in terms of like how things would look. I think that was honestly, those were the main issues. I would like to say that we've been talking a lot about like companies pulling back. Jack Dorsey and Block have not been pulling back, in contrast to Stripe, which I want to which I think Stripe is, I've been very disappointed with Stripe. They did this whole video about how you can pay for, you can use Stripe in different ways with stable coins on like whatever network you want. They're like, oh, it's so cool. You can do USDC over Solana with Stripe and it's really fast. And then they're like ending support for Bitcoin. Whereas Square and Block is launching a 3-nanometer chip with plans to like roll that out to decentralize mining, hopefully making it easier to mine at home, and integrating Square, like if you remember those the squares that you could swipe the cards on, they are allowing users to buy Bitcoin through Cash App when they get transactions. So merchants buying Bitcoin rolled out all across the US. This was actually has been a pilot program for a few years, like a secret pilot program that and so really cool. I think that like people don't realize that Cash App has made billions actually off of Bitcoin, like billions. And Cash App's a very profitable company. So I just, it's good to see entrepreneurs continue to bring Bitcoin into the economy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Though there's a lot of bright spots too. It's just, there's a lot of good stuff going on at the same time. So we can't lose sight of that. It's just part of the process. There's going to be really positive things. There's going to be really negative things where it's a transition. So in a transition, things can get really difficult sometimes.
Yeah. And like, you want to keep it smooth. You're basically like, you don't want to go to war because war sucks.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants war.
Yeah.
And so we want this to be a smooth transition.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Well, do you want to make that our smooth transition out this week?
Yeah, I think so. I would go into the weekend like optimistic, even though this is like, oh no, everybody's all like, I'm going to die on this hill. I would go into the weekend optimistic.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice. That's great.
Yeah.
And by the way, anybody still here that hasn't signed up to Coinbits, you should go sign up. So coinbits.app is the app that David and I are building with other people, not alone. And it's a really good app. It happens to be a KYC app for acquiring Bitcoin in the US. If you're not in the US though, there are other features that you can take advantage of. You can track your wallets. Pretty soon we're going to allow you to connect hardware wallet and spend directly from the app. It's not in the App Store. It's a web app. So you can go to coinbits.app and check it out and sign up there. There is a really good mobile experience. You can sign up to Coinbits and then from a phone, and then you can access it on your phone. And it looks and feels a lot like an app. We will probably be building a native app in the near future, but until then, check it out and set up your account now while Bitcoin's price is still kind of reasonable. And you can start a DCA routine. You can start saving on a schedule. You can use our roundups features. There's a ton of stuff to check out. So coinbits.app, not Coinbase. I still talk to people and they still go to Coinbase. Coinbits.
Yeah.
Back when our company started, Coinbase was not so big. And so it wasn't that big a deal, but it's easy for people to get tripped up. So coinbits.app.
Yeah.
And
it was started during the time when like, it kind of felt like you had to make your crypto company or Bitcoin company, like it had to do something with coin or like something like that. Like you see like all the companies started in like 2020 and 2021, like don't have those names.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, David. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Likewise.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.